a summer camp that gets swept up by floods that could have deaths that could have been averted by, I don't know, putting up some sirens. Or if anybody's pacemaker goes out because the power went down because Texas has a stupid privatized grid system experiment. You know, we won't deal with any of those problems. Or Uvalde, you know, just kids. Anything happened with that police department? Are they still intimidating the parents of the children at Uvalde? No, Texas has real things to focus on, like sending their you know, the best of the best up to Illinois to like patrol parking lots.
Right. And when you say patrol parking lots, at the very least, Brandon Johnson had signed that executive order that prohibits ICE from using city-owned parking lots and garages for their own operations. But because of the Posse Comitatus Act, these National Guard members cannot do anything except basically protect federal property, because Posse Comitatus says that troops, U.S. military personnel, cannot be involved in domestic law enforcement. And Trump has been trying
So,
to
for
get around
instance,
that
we
over
could.
and over.
Well, one famous reason for this being honored by America is so that we couldn't send the troops into the South to deal with the Klan. So we honored it then. We're not honoring it now.
Great point. Great point. And it really says it all. The court case, Illinois' lawsuit to stop this, is still pending. So the judge didn't immediately block the troops from entering the city, but the lawsuit arguments will be heard tomorrow, Thursday. And so the troops still have touched down outside of Chicago. And these legal battles are significant, right? So, like, the courts have temporarily, at the very least, blocked the deployment in Oregon and California. And Trump is still trying to work around those blockages. And there will be appeals, of course, and will go to the Supreme Court. But what Trump has in his back pocket is the invocation of the Insurrection Act, which it creates an exception to Posse Comitatus that would allow the president to send active duty military to stop a, quote, rebellion. He could do that, but that, and he's been toying with doing that, but that's five alarm fire
Yeah,
territory. For now, we have the courts at the very least slowing the National Guard deployments for these reasons.
he's been stewing about how upset he was that he didn't use it during like the Floyd protests, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a glass he's wanted to break for a while.
Right. And in Illinois, too, what's as concerning as everything I just said is Trump calling for the jailing of his political opponents. What a shock. Here he was this morning on Truth Social. Chicago mayor, he can't remember Brandon Johnson's name. Chicago mayor should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers. Governor Pritzker, too.
Sorry, that's such a ridiculous, like, why is it their job to protect the stormtroopers you're putting into their city?
Well, he's mad that of about that executive order I just mentioned, saying that ICE, Johnson may not have the ability to say this about federal buildings, but he says that if you're in parking garages or parking lots outside these federal buildings, you can't use that for your ICE Gestapo operations. Johnson has also directed the Chicago PD not to assist in federal civil immigration arrests, meaning if the person does not have a criminal record or a warrant, Johnson has directed the police in Chicago not to engage with ICE on that. And then you have Pritzker
It's not
and,
their job. I
yeah.
mean, we can't, like, that's not the police's job
Right.
to check people's immigration papers.
It shouldn't be, at the very least. I mean, the red states w want that to be the case. But, you know, Pritzker also has, of course, been vocal, using the bully pulpit to tell people to know their rights and encouraging resistance, peaceful resistance. As a reminder, the pretext for this National Guard piece is violent crime being out of control. Well, Washington Post this morning, I was just reading an article. I didn't even know it was this dramatic over a decade. Violent crime has dropped in Chicago 40% over a decade. That's not just like the pandemic decreases that we saw nationally across these cities that they're still toying about sending the National Guard to. This is a dramatic decrease over a 10-year period.
And I would also just point out, having been in Chicago 15 years ago, didn't need the National Guard there from Texas to keep order in line. Like, ridiculous, like, that this pretext could even be used to put troops, like, occupy other states with people's National Guards for some crime hysteria.
And Mike Johnson is dealing with this shutdown situation. He was asked about Trump calling for Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson to be jailed this morning. And let's listen to how the Speaker of the House tries to get out of this pickle.
Thank you. Do you agree that the mayor of Chicago and the governor of Illinois should be in prison?
Should they be in prison? Should the mayor of Chicago and the governor of Illinois be in prison? I'm not the attorney general. I'm the Speaker of the House, and I'm trying to manage the chaos here. I'm not following the day-to-day on that. I do know that they've resisted the introduction of or the offering of National Guard troops in Chicago, which is a terribly dangerous city and has been destroyed under, in the process of being destroyed under liberal Democrat governance.
Can you pause it?
And
this is hysterical.
Yeah.
This is hysteria. This is Chicken Little, Sky is Falling insanity.
I mean, the 10th Amendment is very clear, not to be all Constitution on you, but the power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. So Pritzker and Johnson have certain authorities. If the federal government is not specifically delineated in terms of their authority, they have authorities as state and local representatives, democratically elected representatives, to govern in the way that they see fit, according to our Constitution. Keep going.
Guard troops in Chicago, which is a terribly dangerous city and has been destroyed under, in the process of being destroyed under liberal Democrat
governance
and
their
terrible policies. I would just cite for you in response Exhibit A, which is the District of Columbia. All of you are able to walk safely into the Capitol today, and you can park your cars blocks away and walk back to your cars, and you're not in fear of being having your purse snatched or your car being jacked or being assaulted. And why is that? Because President Trump had enough of it. He's a strong leader in the Oval Office, and he used the resources that were available to him, the National Guard, to bring order to the chaos. The Democrat mayor of the District of Columbia ultimately said, thank you so much for the reinforcements, and you're all enjoying the spoils of good policy and return to the rule of law. If we could do that in the other major cities in the country where they're having terrible crime crises, that should be seen as a positive. And I think most Americans see it that way. If you're a resident of Chicago or New Orleans or one of the these other Democrat-run cities, you've had enough. You're tired of your family being walking in fear and not being able to enjoy their lives.
Yeah, just like the Iraqis were going to treat us as liberators.
The D.C. Attorney General, Brian Schwab, is suing the Trump administration as of last month over the use of the National Guard. They're just lying through their teeth.
It's performance for their suburbanite electorate.
Yep.
This is like every phone call I've had with like relatives, and they're like, how are you safe in New York? How do you feel safe walking to work or whatever? Well, I feel safe because, you know, it's safe. it's safe to do that. And the anxiety or fear you have is a political product meant toward an end. And this is the end it's always been pushing for. It's always, and this is the one that it pushed for. This is how we ended up being the number one jailer of humanity with our mass incarceration in the 90s. The same sort of fear mongering. It's the same sort of hysteria, except back then, there was actually higher crime, way, way higher than there is now. Like, all these people are playing for, like, boomer and older, like, folks with, like, shadows in their brains. Like, that like are living at the final life as if it's still like 1977 or something.
The people who are most easily fooled by AI slop and the folks that are most scared of cities, that Venn diagram is just a circle. And it's unfortunate because you have some Democrats that are trying to do the same thing, appealing to people in the suburbs. It's funny how we played that clip of Andrew Cuomo, who's not a Democrat right now, running as an independent, but talking about suburban fear of cities to justify his argument. And then you can see who he's really aligned with here in that way. But you have everyone from Tom Suozzi making that argument to Chuck Schumer in 2016, previewing the failure of the Democratic Party for the last 10 years, the pivot to affluent suburbanites, and that appeal. It's made them completely unable to counter this crime narrative. Because when Republicans and conservatives talk about liberal cities, why they focus on it is because cities are places of community, cities are places of art and culture, cities are places of intellectual experimentation, cities are places of community in terms of just being in close proximity to other people and other people that may not look like you. So they use urban crime or whatever as a shorthand for black or brown crime, but they're also threatened by the multiculturalism of cities. The fact that different kinds of people live amongst one another and have solidarity networks that build, as is happening right now, in response to fascism. And Sam has been making this point about the Chicago police and how they've got to start, and some are, we'll see, standing a little bit more with their communities, because this is like
as opposed to sitting in the cuck chair. Yes. As different types of federal forces come in and do their jobs for them,
because this is a threat to them too. Listen to this report here from CBS about what appears to be ICE faking 911 calls, overwhelming local police, preventing them from doing their actual work to try to get around Johnson's directives towards the police department.
And I just have to say, this is in the context of an America where you frequently see right wingers say, if your protest gets in the way of a first responder, you can be shot basically on the spot. Here's how ICE treats your local first responders.
You are watching as Broadview police respond to a 911 call, claiming someone was tampering with a gate at the ICE detention facility there. Body camera footage obtained by the CBS News Chicago investigators shows several Broadview police officers respond to an alleged homeland security threat. The gate in question is where ICE takes detained immigrants for processing.
What's up, guys?
Hey, what's up?
Not much.
How are you?
Good. We got a call of subjects trying to climb over the fence or something.
Not since we've been here.
But when police arrive, all they find is two people and a camera. Okay. Our CBS photographer filming the exterior of the building with a CBS security guard by his side.
Okay, and you guys didn't tamper with any of those?
No, man.
The 911 call claiming someone was tampering with the gate came from an ICE agent. According to this incident report, an ICE agent called police for help.
But he can't go and try to force his way into that door.
Okay, so the guy in the booth?
He just recorded the camera.
Do you believe that that was a false call?
I do.
Again, it was just our CBS photographer filming the exterior of the building.
In your mind, bogus.
Yes. It's disturbing. It's ridiculous.
Broadview Police Chief Thomas Mills says this is just one of several questionable 911 calls his police department has received from ICE at this facility recently. This same detention center has become the site of at least three other incidents involving federal agents who are accused of hitting people with cars, shooting projectiles, and using chemical agents on journalists, including a CBS reporter last Sunday.
We played some of that footage. Here's another still. This is a Chicago Tribune immigration reporter named Laura Rodriguez.
She posted this, but it's not, she wasn't the one who had the gun pointed at her.
Gotcha. Thank you. Either way,
yeah.
This is crazy. A local reporter showing a federal agent. This is a woman that was recording them. Thanks, Brian. She took this still, I guess. Jess, a U.S. citizen and member of a neighborhood patrol team that documents and shares ICE activity across the city, was filming when the incident occurred earlier today in the Berwyn area. And this is a cop pointing a gun at her, or an ICE
thug. Yeah, that's like
thug.
Tear gas, pepper stormtrooper.
Thank you. Tear gas. Either way, I mean.
Yeah, crazy.
It's violence. Violence.
It's fascism.
They are a threat to community safety. The 911 thing, too. They don't care about the community. They don't care if people have actual 911 calls and emergencies where they need first responders and police to be aware. All they care about is meeting quotas and ripping apart families. That is their job.
They look at, they're not like the idea that they're, again, it is the Iraq metaphor. I'm not just making a joke. That's literally what's happening right now, is the actual people here hate this occupation.
Looks like the West Bank.
Yeah, it's performance for elsewhere. And, like, yeah, these guys themselves, they look at this like they're going into fucking Baghdad.
And they have the tools to do it. I mean, when we talk about everything being in the shadow of the war on terror, the reason police have all these little toys, the reason ICE does, I mean, and they're just awash, is because the military-industrial complex got so much money, made so much machinery for our illegal war in Iraq and our war on terror in the wake of 9/11. And because there was so much excess equipment, hey, send it over to local police. Well, why can't we have our Gestapo at ICE use these tactics? And then we'll call things terrorism in the way that we did in the early part of the earlier part of the 21st century to justify civil rights abuses and rollbacks. They are doing that now locally.
If you look at this, there is no training. This man has received no training.
Yeah.
You, in combat, you don't point at something you're not going to shoot. This is just...
What if you want to scare it?
This guy's training is movies.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
We'll be talking a little bit more about the state of the world and the country in just a sec before we get to Daniel Nakanian. But first, a word from some of our sponsors here. Delete Me is a service that I started using before I even joined the Majority Report, and I can get behind it and speak to you about it, about how helpful it's been in removing my personal data online, and yours as well, it can be. Especially at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. When I started in this job, some of my information was out there, personal information, and you got to get that scrubbed. And I was recommended Delete Me. They said they do a great job, it's a great investment, and it's been, I mean, gosh, nearly 10 years, nearly 9 or 8 years or something since I've been using Delete Me. It does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information from data broker websites. DeleteMe knows your privacy is worth protecting. Sign up and provide DeleteMe with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. DeleteMe sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing what information they found, where they found it, and what they removed. And DeleteMe isn't just a one-time service. DeleteMe is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. Thank you to DeleteMe for sponsoring the Majority Report. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe. Now, at a special discount for our listeners, get 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to www.joindeleteme.com/majority and use promo code MAJORITY at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to www.joindeleteme.com/majority and enter code MAJORITY at checkout. That's www.joindeleteme.com/majority, code MAJORITY, link below in the video description and at majority.fm and wherever you're listening to or watching this. And lastly, this episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Wildgrain. Wildgrain is the first bake-from-frozen subscription box for artisanal breads, seasonal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. My mouth is just watering thinking about the Wildgrain that I tried recently. The apple cider donuts It was, I mean, it was phenomenal.
It's just a pleasing phrase.
Yes, it's so good. And I think Sam says he still has some frozen. I may ask to steal a few. Unlike store-bought stuff, wild grain uses a slow fermentation process that's easier on your belly, richer in nutrients and antioxidants, and made with simple ingredients you can pronounce. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable, and they're constantly adding seasonal and limited-time products for you to enjoy. In addition to their classic box, they now have a gluten-free box and a plant-based box. Again, those apple cider donuts were amazing. I mean, I'm really bad with kinds of bread, but there was like it's like almost like a figure eight the way it looked. I had that too, way too much. Put it, you know, butter. I went in. It was really, really good. This fall, treat yourself and your family to warm sourdough breads and seasonal baked goods from Wild Grain. Rumor has it they have apple cider donuts and pumpkin cinnamon biscuits. I didn't even know about those. So get them before those seasonal items sell out. For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box. When you go to wildgrain.com/majority to start your subscription, you heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/majority. That's wildgrain.com/majority, or you can use promo code majority at checkout. Don't miss their seasonal products. We will put a link to this down below in the video or an episode description and at majority.fm. Again, that's $30 off your first box plus free croissants in every box. Go to wildgrain.com/majority to start your subscription. We will be talking to Daniel Nakanian in just a second, but wanted to cover some of the developments in the flotilla with the flotilla here. As I mentioned before, there was a second aid flotilla that was intercepted by Israel illegally in international waters, headed to Gaza this morning. And thankfully, we have reports that, you know, some of our friends of the show, Greg Stoker, has been released. David Adler of Progressive International has been released. And we'll play Adler's talk about what he went through in just a second. But let's first start with what Greta Thunberg had to say. She posted a video on social media about really what is most important to remember here. The full thing is really, really worth a watch. We'll just play a few minutes of it. She posted this on her Instagram, but already one of the most impactful activists of the 21st century, and it's not particularly close. Greta could have become someone who cashed in, who did the speaking circuit, who got a documentary made about her.
There are many examples.
There are.
And she can talk very well.
Yeah.
Easy money for her.
I mean, she's 22 years old, and she resisted the pull of celebrity because I think about how RFK speaks about like autism and things like that. And Greta's been open about her autism diagnosis and how it's given her the ability to focus and be singularly minded and not distracted. And her neurodivergence is like truly part of her superpower as she describes it. I love that there are so many people throughout the world that maybe on the autism spectrum or have different specialized interests or see the world a little bit differently. And we have like this kind of administration that, you know, harkens back to like an era of eugenics where disability or neurodivergence is spoken about as some sort of like deformity or an example of a degenerate moral character, where it's really just like a part of the beauty of human experience. And you can have people like Greta who have that intensity about what she believes in and she's just never let up the entire way. And she's connected climate change to capitalism, and then also the imperial colonial project of Israel to capitalism and to exploitation. And that in and of itself has been so impactful. So the reports were that she was abused in Israeli detention, that she was grabbed by her hair, I saw some people say, witnesses on the flotilla say, that she was forced to kiss the Israeli flag, that she was paraded around. But Greta has basically refused to even talk about that. This is what her message is for everybody who's now paying attention to this story.
Hello, this is going to be a long video, but I have a lot to say, so bear with me. And we are now many who are safe and released from imprisonment and absurd mistreatment, but many of our comrades from Global Smooth Flotilla are not, and they need to be released now. But most importantly, we are not the story. Thousands of Palestinians are currently being held in Israeli dungeons without a trial, hundreds of which are children. Millions are living trapped under an illegal siege in an apartheid state and occupation, who are being systematically starved and bombed to pieces. Basic societal infrastructure is being targeted and destroyed, and Palestinians are being systematically deprived of their very, very basic rights and means to survive, such as producing their own food, controlling their own territorial waters, and children being able to go to school. And the whole world knows that this did not start on October the 7th, 2023. And these Israeli war crimes have happened with impunity and with help and legitimization from our governments, institutions, and media. And this is the story here that people should be focusing on. Do not let me and other volunteers on the flotilla be a distraction. And the Global Sumut Flotilla is about solidarity with Palestinians, international solidarity. And what Israel did was mainly not to illegally abduct us in international waters and abuse us in prison, but it was that it stopped a humanitarian mission and violating international law by preventing humanitarian aid from entering Gaza, a population that are being systematically starved by Israel. And this is a blatant violation of international humanitarian and maritime law. And I also want to make it very clear that our imprisonment by Israel is a direct result of our governments. They keep talking about the importance of upholding human rights and international law and to get aid into Gaza. And then when we do their job, trying to do just that while being completely peaceful and abiding by international law, they fail to ensure our safety. And this mission should not have to exist. It is a last resort when all means fall short and when those in power fail to step up and do the bare minimum.
All right, I think that's good. Especially calling out their own governments, because this flotilla has shown, Israel, you want to risk bombing a European warship? You want to risk starting a war with a Western allied country by attacking them if they decide to break your illegal siege and control of the waterways of the Gaza Strip, which has been in place since 2006, I believe. 2006. Just another reminder that this has not, that this, did not start on October 7th, 2023. And there was footage where you could see Palestinians were able to fish for the first time in quite a while because the Israeli Navy was so distracted by the flotilla. What does that say? That they're being prevented from producing their own food by fishing because Israel will kill them if they try to do so. I mean, we know what's happening here. Greta doesn't want to make it about that treatment. It totally makes sense. But I think everybody that's watching this for the most part understands that the genocide is of the utmost importance. And I found here David Adler's testimony really important to share as well. David Adler of Progressive International was finally released after a long time. And I'm seeing that the Jerusalem Post reports that there were over nearly 500 activists, journalists, humanitarians who were on the flotillas. And I think there are less than 10 that are still in detention, but they should be at the forefront of our minds as well. But here's Adler speaking about his experience as a Jewish man and how he was treated differently and used by the Israeli government when they were in captivity. And I think they were in the prison in the Negev, which is a torture camp by Israel. And God knows what's happening to Palestinians there.
What happened when you guys were taken and captured? Where were you taken? What were the conditions like? How were they treating you?
In Ashdod port, we were frog marched out, heads down, knees on our knees, and, you know, for basically a giant photo op for Ben-Gavir, as one of the few Jews on the mission. They found me, asked me if I was Jewish, ripped me by the ear, threw me in front of the Israeli flag to sit away from the whole group that was sat, hundreds of us, on our knees and heads down, for Ben-Gavir to show up and come yell at us in our face that we're terrorists. And so we were treated. So from that moment, we were strip searched and zip tied and blindfolded and sent to this detention camp without any kind of process. We were basically not allowed to speak to lawyers. Most people didn't speak to lawyers and would not speak to lawyers. We still haven't spoken to lawyers the whole time. We were disappeared into the Negev desert for 3 days without any confirmation from the U.S. government that we were even alive. I don't like, you know, speaking as a Jew, you know, but like it bears repeating, the anti-Semitism that we endured at the hands of the state of Israel was so wild. Like it was, you know, it's so important that we change the narrative on the idea that the state of Israel is some kind of, you know, birthright or land for diasporic Jews to come home to. We were treated like, you know, obviously Palestinians are considered to be the most dangerous thing that they need to either deny or destroy. But, you know, an unfaithful Jew to this Netanyahu government is considered to be like, you know, so threatening to them that we were given this special interrogation by Ben-Gavir and the other Jew that was with me in the cells, who was suffering from severe medication withdrawals, who was begging and begging and begging day in and day out for a medic, was denied the most basic access to that medic. I don't want to name him without him being able to name himself, but begging. I mean, you could hear his cries every single morning, day and night. You could hear his suffering. And they basically, the guards at this facility just said, you know, yeah, you know, in your dreams, we'll be with you.
So you can see footage of Ben-Gavir taunting the flotilla members. These are humanitarians trying to feed people. And that is another really important piece of information about how Israel, in practice, treats non-Zionist Jews. They treat them as traitors, as threats, in ways where they singled out Jews on the flotilla because of the threat that they pose to the Zionist propaganda project. And that is why we must reiterate that Israel loves the idea that there's an increase in anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish hatred right now, anti-Jewish conspiracism. They enjoy having that as a pretext to say that there's only one safe place for you to go, increase our population totals in the settler colony.
If there wasn't a global anti-Semitic emergency, then there's no reason to do an apartheid state for Jews and Jim Crow.
Yep.
But that's what Zionists want. That's what Bibi wants. That's what, frankly, a huge number of the Israeli population wants. And so the issue is, how much are we going to fund it?
Really cool, writes in Mandela Mandela. Nelson Mandela's grandson and South Africa legislator was finally released earlier today and gave a press conference. We will be on the lookout for that, and that's great news to hear. We'll be talking to Daniel Nakanian in just a second, but I wanted to quickly draw attention to this one story because it's really important. The Supreme Court is going to hear a case next week that involves the Voting Rights Act, which the Supreme Court has continuously eroded over the past decade plus. They have agreed to rehear this case called Louisiana v. Calais. Now, they had heard arguments about this case combined with another case earlier this year, and then I think they filed it for re-argument in the fall. I'm not sure why, but it's really significant. Louisiana has been in a fight since the 2020 census over a second majority, minority, majority black congressional district. So there was the 2020 census. In 2021, Louisiana redrew its congressional maps in response to it. The census found that in Louisiana, around a third of the population is black. There are six congressional districts in Louisiana. They created only one majority black district out of the six. So then black voters and civil rights organizations filed lawsuits in the middle district of Louisiana. They challenged the map. It went up to an appeals court. The appeals court says Louisiana needs to draw a second majority black district. But now we have the people claiming reverse racism. So then a group of white voters in response to that challenged the redrawn map with a second majority black district in a federal lawsuit that they filed in the Western District of Louisiana. So now the Supreme Court is going to hear that case next week. But check out this headline from Politico. These are the implications. Republicans could draw 19 more House seats after an upcoming Supreme Court ruling. Democratic voting rights groups are preparing for a nightmare scenario if the Supreme Court guts a key part of the landmark civil rights era legislation, the Voting Rights Act, a very real possibility this term. Ahead of the court's October 15th rehearing of Louisiana v. Calais, a case that has major implications for the VRA, two voting rights groups are sounding the alarm, warning that eliminating Section 2, a provision that prohibits racial gerrymandering when it dilutes minority voting power, would let Republicans redraw up to 19 House seats to favor the party and crush minority representation in Congress. That calculation, made in a new report from Fair Fight Action and Black Voters Matter Fund, shared exclusively with Politico, would all but guarantee Republican control of Congress. While a ruling in time for next year's midterms is unlikely, that's the one silver lining of this story, the organizations behind the report said that it's not out of the question. Taken together, the groups identified 27 total seats that Republicans could redraw in their favor ahead of the midterms, 19 of which stem from Section 2 being overturned. Without Section 2, up to 30% of the Congressional Black Caucus and 11% of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus could be drawn out of their seats, according to the report. And this article cites Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas, Florida would be the states affected. The election experts basically say that in Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Mississippi, they could basically get rid of all of their Democratic members. Now, there are problems with the way that Southern states have, like, gerrymandered. Clyburn is an example of that. It doesn't, I think, create the best incentives for the Democratic Party representation. But this is a really, really scary case here because Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act has already been weakened significantly by the Supreme Court in numerous rulings recently. And they already have overturned whole other parts of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, including the infamous case of Shelby County v. Holder in 2013, where they removed the requirements for Southern states to get federal approval before changing their election laws, like with voter ID or with redistricting, because in the Voting Rights Act at the time, and still to this day, obviously the South was insanely racist and were trying to use these tactics to make sure that black voters did not have representation, adequate representation. And so this has been a big part of the Republican takeover of parts of our Congress, or the overrepresentation of Republicans when there was a 50-50 split in the Senate. I always use this statistic, but it was under Biden. The 50 Democrats represented 40 million more people than the 50 Republicans in the Senate. This is just like making the House as gerrymandered and undemocratic as possible. So really important case to pay attention to here. And Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is really important because the 15th Amendment was curtailed without the prohibitions that were put in place by Section 2 of the VRA. It was an enforcement mechanism for what rights are the rights that were guaranteed under the 15th Amendment, the guarantee to the right to vote regardless of race. It created legislation that put parameters in place, and the Supreme Court is in the process of doing away with that altogether for the most part.
We have media lousy with people who take money from billionaires to obscure the problems with society. And there's all this talk about what went wrong. And, you know, people like Ezra Klein, very, you know, upset about what chances were missed. Well, here's one. April 10th, 2022, how Joe Manchin knifed the Democrats and bailed on saving democracy. He's going to filibuster reform voting rights legislation. Well, they couldn't get him on board. And why is that not like part of our like regular thing that we talk about? That we talk about this, the failures of Manchin and Sinema all the time. But like, this is who knifed him in the back. This is, democracy was given a mortal wound when you don't act to cultivate it more.
Yep.
There's people actively going against it. There's, you can't be neutral on something that is like in a political fight, you know. And but maybe it was because of something Kamala Harris said in the primaries that was too woke or something.
Yeah. Trans people, how can we blame them this time? Quick break on that front. Got that story in. We'll be talking to Daniel Nakanian. We are back, and I am so happy to be joined now by Daniel Nakanian, founder and editor-in-chief of Bolts Magazine and their cheat sheet for the 2025 general elections is out now. Everybody go check it out. We'll put a link down below, but that's what we're going to be talking about today. Everything you need to know or races you haven't paid attention to coming up in November. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's always fun to join you.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about Bolts Magazine's guide, the cheat sheet to the races, the general elections this year. And maybe we can start with some of the governor's races that, you know, here in New York, of course, all we can talk about is Zoran Mamdani. But there are more races going on across the country.
Certainly. Well, you know, it's supposed to be an off year, but at Bolts we cover local and state elections, local and state politics. So our sort of idea is that an off year actually gives us more space, even more room to drill down in some of the hot spots where there are interesting tensions, interesting conflicts, interesting elections. And you know, so we have 180 elections on this cheat sheet. They're organized hopefully in ways that people can browse thematically based on what they're interested in. But you know, the idea is that you may have heard about this big issue of school boards in recent year and the efforts on the right to take over school boards and restrict the rights of trans students, for instance. Well, that is the sort of thing that off-year elections can be about. You know, you've heard about New York, the New York City race that you just mentioned. Emma, but there's of course other left-leaning candidates who aren't being inspired by Mamdani or say their kindred spirits who are running in other places in the country. If you care about ICE or immigration, there's a lot of elections this fall where candidates are taking opposite positions on what it means to be a city, a county, a state, and have to respond to Trump on how to enforce immigration law. So those are the kind of things we're trying to pay attention to on this cheat sheet. There's so many places to start. You know, the highest profile items on it are what you just said, the governor's races. There's two this fall, one in Virginia and one in New Jersey. Each party holds one of them. Each party is trying to flip the one they don't have or keep it. And no matter sort of what else happens in November, that's probably going to be the headline. Maybe interestingly on immigration enforcement, that's a very clear stakes, for instance, in the governor's race in New Jersey, which has state protections in place that prevent law enforcement from collaborating with ICE. And the Republican governor there, the Republican candidate there, one of their main promises is to end those protections as soon as he enters office. You know, so that's the sort of thing we are keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and I there was some concerning polling about Cheryl showing her a little bit too close to comfort with Chiderella. I think I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly. But that would be a massive problem in a blue state if that's where we're at for Democrats. And you also, of course, have Spanberger in Virginia who is running. And it's interesting because I saw that they're trying to use like anti-trans ads down there in Virginia because the consultant class felt like Kamala lost because of the they-them ad or whatever. Now, it turns out it was the economy and the genocide of Gaza and that kind of thing. Like, that at least there's some hope that Spanberger, you know, might run away with it. We'll see. But those are the two big ones what I've been thinking.
Yeah, those are the two big ones. I mean, the polls at the moment in both show Democrats ahead in neither of them by a huge margin. I mean, you're right, a little more attention paid on New Jersey. I mean, I think you're really right that the race in Virginia, the Republican nominee there has really, really focused on attacking trans rights as the issue she's focused on. I mean, among many things we could say about that, like it's also Virginia is the state that has been hit very hard by DOGE, by the federal layoffs, by the Trump administration. A lot of people there are federal workers. So there's really a disconnect there of all places for the Republicans to just really drill campaign ads, attacks on trans rights.
And so on immigration, what are some of the other races in the country where if you're in your community and you want to protect other folks in your community from being terrorized by ICE, are there any ballot measures or key races outside of course, the New Jersey governor's race that people would want to pay attention to?
Well, I think the key question on, if you look away from the federal government on what's happening with ICE is what are pretty much any level of government that has a law enforcement force doing about it? Are they actively going to collaborate and help and deploy their police or their state guard to help ICE? Are they going to have very strict restrictions against that? Even if there are restrictions, they're often channels of communication or loopholes. What is being done? So that really means paying attention to the mayoral race or the mayoral policy where you are, the sheriff office, which is one that doesn't get a lot of attention, but we've actually talked a lot about Emma in prior times we've talked. But right. The sheriff controls the jail, controls often a law enforcement force, and so that's often where we see the clearest contrasts on ICE policy. For instance, this fall in Albuquerque, just to give you an example, there's an interesting mayoral race there where the Democratic mayor is promising to keep up sort of restrictions on collaborating with ICE. And his opponent is the sheriff, the Republican sheriff is running for mayor and is criticizing this idea of keeping a barrier to ICE. You know, another example for a sheriff race is Bucks county in Pennsylvania, that's the place that's near Philly, a suburban county. A Republican sheriff just signed a contract with ICE a few months ago to collaborate with ICE to have some sheriff deputies effectively act as ICE agents from a formal contract. And Democrats are criticizing that agreement. So that's really a kind of
Does Pennsylvania, not have the same kinds of laws that, say, New Jersey has that allows for that
Pennsylvania doesn't really have state-level protections. Well, in part because Democrats haven't had, Democrats often do not pass protections when they control a state. But in the places where those protections exist, it's probably again because Democrats have had state level control, and they haven't had that in Pennsylvania. I mean, actually, Emma, to put a finer point on that, there's sort of a lot of controversy on the left in New Jersey because the reason that the Republican governor could come in and almost snap his fingers and end protections is that there is no law in place. All that's happened in New Jersey is that the attorney general has issued the equivalent of an executive order, and the state Democrats who control the state assembly and state senate have actually not passed a law that would codify this stuff, even though there's been a lot of push there. So, that's actually an example where state Democrats have dropped the ball on passing the protections in a way that would not allow a Republican just to win one governor's race and erase the protections.
It sounds very New Jersey. I mean, like there's definitely communities of suburban areas that are pretty racist towards immigrants, and that I would imagine those state reps are appealing to those constituencies with an action. But Pennsylvania also, there's another key thing that people need to pay attention to, which is the Supreme Court in the state. Can you talk about that? Because it feels like every cycle we're on a razor's edge about which way Pennsylvania is going to go.
I mean, if you care about national politics and only national politics, that even is probably more important than the governor's race that we're talking about, which are ultimately about state level politics. There's a state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, like there is in every state, and Democrats have a 5-2 majority on it. And that majority has done a lot, specifically on election law in the past 10 years. They struck down a gerrymander in 2018, a Republican gerrymander, and in the 2018 midterms, Democrats gained 4 seats from a court-drawn map. They've upheld mail voting. They have rejected Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. So that court has really been in the news constantly on election law. So there's 5-2 and 3 justices where Democrats are on the ballot in November. And usually, actually, what's a little confusing or complicated here is usually these retention elections for justices are sleepy affairs. Not much happens. There's often not that much money, but that's really changed in recent years. And this is really the first time in decades where there's a real effort on the part of the Republican Party to oust these justices. They're now spending a lot of money. This billionaire has invested a lot of money in sending ads to people, and they're trying to oust 3 justices on the court. It's a bit complicated. What would happen if they do? It would tie the court, erase the majority, but kind of set up a complicated multi-year process. We have an article in Bolt's up yesterday that people could go read if they're interested. But the basic picture is that Republicans have no path to a majority on this court before the next presidential election if they don't win this fall, and they really want a path to the court majority before the next presidential election. I'll let you put together why that might be, but yeah. But to that, those are the stakes this year in Pennsylvania.
And you mentioned mayoral races earlier. You have Detroit, you've got Minneapolis, that's a major one. Seattle,
right,
where in Minneapolis and Seattle, you have some really, progressive challengers. We've covered the Omar Fateh debacle on the show before, in terms of the debacle being the the DMFI rescinding their endorsement and how insane it was. But what is the status of some of those mayoral races, and what are the consequences of some of them? What are the most consequential races?
Yeah, I mean, you've named the ones that I was going to name immediately. And they're interesting because they have this similar the 3 you mentioned, Minneapolis, Seattle, and New York, have this similar dynamic of a left candidate You know, we, I think they probably would just the three candidates, Omar Fateh, Mamdani, and Katie Wilson would probably use different words to describe their politics, but they're all trying to take over a city governed by centrist Democrats. That's an interesting parallel to see what happens. Seattle seems particularly interesting since the mayor trailed there actually in the first round in August. So that is almost sure to be at the very least very competitive in November, if not a pickup by the left. But there's a lot of elections out there. There's also interesting elections at the city council level in those places. Actually, there's DSA candidates in Minneapolis and other cities that are trying to gain ground. Also, in some places in Ohio that I have on my sheet, not necessarily the first places you think about as the places to look for left organizing right now, but definitely places to watch. And I was going to add something about Seattle that I'm banking on right now. So I'll throw it back to you.
No. Well, we were just basically the progressive challengers, the dynamic being similar with like the establishment trying to push back against it. I mean, it is for all of those three in all of those three instances. It is a bit of a similar dynamic.
And I was going to the fourth city I was going to bring in was Boston, which was supposed to be this like a very interesting race this fall, and maybe the fourth place where it was particularly clear stake for the left, because the mayor there, Michelle Wu, is a progressive, and she was facing a challenge from the son of the owner of the New England Patriots, who was spending a lot of his own money and attacking her from the right. But he did so badly in the first round in September a month ago that he dropped out from the race, actually. So Wu will not face any opponent. There's actually a general election, a runoff on the ballot in November, but it's just going to be Wu's name. So that was going to be my going into the fall, those were the four elections I was going to name, but one of them has already disappeared.
Wu has the benefit of incumbency there, but right. It is like also just, I mean, that big money donor trying to unseat or progressive it's very similar in that way. Glad that didn't win the day. Go on.
And it's also interesting because you often think of these races as their own little islands, because there are mayoral races happening in Seattle and Minneapolis, but it's interesting to see the candidates often refer to each other. Like Katie Wilson has talked about Mamdani. She sort of joked that she's the less sort of smooth version of Mamdani. I think a lot of these candidates we've talked about have mentioned Wu as someone that they draw inspiration from. So, you know, it's interesting to see these ties that are forming, and especially if there's more of them. I think especially if we see in New York City, if Mamdani wins, I assume he's going to want to play on those connections to make himself look connected to other parts of the country, other mayors who think like him and want to do the sort of things he wants to do.
Well, it's also a natural fit because these cities are under threat right now directly by the Trump administration. So collaboration between mayors seems to make absolute logical sense just in terms of governance. Let's turn to the courts for a bit. And, you know, when we're looking at prosecutors and other legal measures, even things that might be on the ballot that you want people to be aware of. What are the most important races coming up on that front?
Yeah. The immediate thought that comes to mind before I open it up is this very intriguing race in Philly. If anyone who's watching this has read or cares about the idea of a progressive DAs, reformed DAs that has sort of emerged in the past few years, Philly has been the place you may have heard about. Larry Krasner has been the DA there for 8 years, sort of has become an emblem for the idea of reformed prosecutors, of the idea of trying to reduce incarceration or reduce the severity of penalties from within the system. And he won a primary, a Democratic primary, in May, which was contested, And his opponent insisted he was not going to run as a Republican. He was going to stop as a Democrat. And then he changed his mind over the summer.
Republicans
convinced him to run again. I mean, not that different than what's happening in New York. And so now Krasner faced a rematch against someone he already defeated in May, as who's running as a Republican in Philly. That's really a tall order to run as a Republican in Philly. But I mean, to the extent that you care about prosecutors, that's really where you should start. So that might be the most interesting. Another one in Seattle. Maybe we could. That's super interesting in relation to what we were saying. Seattle elected a Republican prosecutor in 2021. That's the only Republican in office in Seattle right now, and she really turned to more aggressive politics around crime, around quality of life offenses, and so on. And she's in huge trouble right now, heading into November. And that's interesting in relation to the mayoral race, the races for city council in Seattle. There's a general, Seattle really is a place where there seems to be up and down the ballot the potential for left gains, not just in the mayoral race, but sort of an overall picture that voters are not satisfied there with the status quo and governance from the center or the right over the past 4 years. So those are races to watch, to see. You know, there's been this idea that the Reform DA movement has lost steam, has lost its figureheads, and there's definitely been some high profile losses last year. But you
like
know,
in
we're
San
also
Francisco,
seeing that...
though, but that is all like tech guy, rich billionaire money. I mean, and they were riding this crime panic. I don't see the same environment being there for them at this point, even with all the money that they have on their side.
I mean, it's interesting you say that, because the high profile, it's not just San Francisco. Like, the high profile Reform DA losses have generally come in California. There's been LA, Oakland, San Francisco, which is a lot, but also interesting that there's a California dynamic. This year, there was actually the DA in New York City, Alvin Bragg, Philly DA, other DAs in small places that we've covered have faced similar criticism that they've let their guard down and so on around crime, but they're winning re-election. And they're willing re-election so far. I mean, I think the second thing that people should really be thinking about when they think about criminal legal reform and elections is sheriffs. We already talked about them. I mean, that's a very different picture. I mean, I sort of talked about a couple of sheriff races where we're seeing tensions. The overall picture, Emma, is that no one is running for sheriffs in places where conservative sheriffs are very aggressively helping ICE. There's been and places that are not red Republican areas, there's been an absence of candidate. You know, we've actually done a couple of articles on this in both on Virginia, a couple of places that are very swingy, very competitive. There's no Democrat running for sheriff on the sort of like, we need to change our approach to ICE. That's not in a way surprising. Sheriffs by nature are going to attract a more law and order kind of candidate. But we've also seen places or in the last few years, many places actually, where sheriffs have run and won on the platform of ending ties with ICE. So it's definitely doable, definitely possible. We've seen it. And the fact that in 2025, that was so many places where that just didn't come up at all. It's not even that competitive. There's no one is running. That's sort of a story in and of itself, I think, as well.
Can you, to take us back to New York for a bit, can you talk about what's going on in Nassau County? I'm very interested in Nassau County as somebody from the tri-state area, but also because I believe that Nassau police are the highest paid in the country, and they kind of run the whole show out there on Long Island. And it seems like, you know, it could go either way, because they were the first county. They banned masking in response to the pro-Palestine protests. It's a very cop-centered area and kind of like the center of the suburban panic over crime in the city. That's the number one county I would think of, honestly. So what's going on there with their like local criminal justice, the prosecutors and the races on that front?
Great question, because there's a lot happening in Nassau County. Nassau County, which is in a very, very huge county, but I think above a million people for people who are not from New York. And so, yes, actually, 2021 Republic, which is the last time the elections this cycle were up four years ago, Republicans made a lot of gains in that county. They took over the county executive seat. They took over the DA, the DA's office. And, well, on purely partisan terms, the Democrats are trying to erase those gains this year. I mean, that would actually be a story that is relevant nationally because Trump, I believe, don't quote me on that, though I'm saying it on the show, but I think Trump flipped the county in 24, which was a big deal as well, which had been sort of previewed by the Republicans' gains earlier in the local elections.
So I don't remember, that would not shock me whatsoever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like, Democrats, you know, Tom Suozzi's from like part of that district, if people know him on the national level, of like, that's the kind of right-wing Democrat that could only get elected there. Right.
And so Democrats are trying to flip back the DA's office, the county executive office. I think, from my understanding of the dynamic, they're definitely not doing that on anything like a criminal legal reform platform. I think you sort of already summed it up. The at least on these issues, on police, the line there is to sort of agree with the criticism Republicans have done of Democratic governance in the state, of bail reform. There seems to be a lot of criticism from Democrats in Nassau, of the Democrats in New York City, of Zoran Mamdani, and so on, and trying to triangulate there. So that's the dynamic. And super interesting that that's all happening within, you know, within
20 miles,
a mile
of
each other. There's potentially Zoran Mamdani campaigning and winning a precinct, and a mile away, there's this dynamic in Nassau. But that if you want two versions of the Democratic Party, those are happening there, very, very close to each other, and both trying to win new ground that they don't have right now.
Nassau County spokesperson, I should have known to cite one of our frequent IMers here, says our maps were ungerrymandered this year. So yeah, I didn't put two and two together.
So they're Democrats are trying to flip the these offices countywide, but they're also trying to flip the equivalent of a county board, and the Democrats sued to redraw the maps of the county board because they're actually drawn by the county. I mean, every state is different, right? But in New York, the county board drew its own boundaries, and that's so there's room there for Democratic gains by virtue of this court battle.
Yes, and NRIMer says you are correct. Nassau did flip to red in 2024, and it went 54-44 Biden in 2020.
Yeah, wow.
So that's quite significant.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, lastly, what about ballot initiatives? What should people be looking out for to vote directly on something that could benefit their community?
Well, the ballot initiative that is going to take all of the attention is Prop 50 in California, which is redistricting by the Gavin Newsom redistricting initiative. I'm sure you, almost everyone who's listening to this knows about that. So I'll skip. Two, there's a lot else happening on the ballot, but I think the most interesting and off year is, you know, all these counties and cities trying to fund themselves and trying to fund infrastructure, trying to fund often things that are, you know, not sexy necessarily to talk about, like school repair and a new school or a new transit line or a housing development, and that often comes down to these bonds measures. And so there's a bunch happening. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of money that is dependent on voters approving a bonds measure around the country. So that's really interesting to think of how much comes down to that at the level of just the basic infrastructure around the country, right? But there's also some interesting measures. For instance, Olympia in Washington is voting on a bill of rights for labor protections. It would also increase the minimum wage to $20, I think. But it also contains a bunch of other protections there in Olympia. So that's just the kind of measure that, you know, is happening around the country that is interesting to keep an eye on.
Well, Daniel Nakanian, giving us a great sense of what Bolts Magazine has been working on and more. And you can find all of that at the Bolts Magazine. We'll put a link to it down below. boltsmag.org, and you can look up your cheat sheet to the 2025 general elections. Everybody check it out wherever you are in the country. If you're here in the United States, you can see what's going to be important coming up in November. Daniel Nakanian, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right, with that, folks, we're going to wrap up the free part of the program and head into the fun part of the program, where we will take your calls, we will read your IMs, we will have fun. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Yeah, two guests last night on Left Reckoning. Justin Chen, union president for federal workers, also an environmental engineer, talked about the shutdown and also the Doge period and the assault on the federal workforce, and also Michael Aravalo talking about a guy, Tim Kennedy, who I'd never heard of, but he's apparently in the manosphere as a vet / UFC guy who may have stolen Valor several
from
different
me.
Times. Exactly. do you have a Medal of Valor, Brian?
I can't disclose that information.
Neither confirm nor deny.
That was Pam Bondi under oath.
But yeah, go check out that episode at patreon.com/leftreckoning.
All right, guys. If you have the ability, please become a member. It really helps us be resilient in these trying times and helps pay our bills, which... I just got my Con Ed bill yesterday. Oh my God. It's not a joke. I cannot believe. I mean, is this all AI?
Yeah, it's AI pricing.
It's gotta be, right? These servers using up all our AI. I mean, what Fortune reported that OpenAI alone is emitting or using more energy than New York City and San Diego combined. So I don't think that's probably good for our electricity bills. Maybe we should stop some of this stuff.
But I saw a video of Michael Jackson doing stand-up.
And
that's worth $400 a month.
I mean,
the power bill.
Right, and accelerating the climate catastrophe at untold levels. Holy moly.
Look, a bunch of rich people have put a lot of money towards AI working, and we all need to do our best to make sure that they're able to get money back from that, or the economy is going to be very sad, okay?
I don't want the anthropomorphized economy to have to feel bad things, but it does show why the whole AI industry was trying to get that piece of wording into the Genius Act that prevented all states from regulating AI for 10 years. Thankfully, that was taken out. The bill is still atrocious, but that's why they were trying to do it, because people are going to see their energy bills go up with all of these servers. And
they already have. John Stewart talked to this guy who we should maybe book on the show, but he's talking about that kid who was suicidal.
Oh, yeah.
And the course of 6 fucking months, the AI coached him to kill himself. In one of the imperatives that these AI have is that you don't go to other sources to resolve your disagreements, like the people you're having with them. You stay on the AI because time is money. More you're on the AI, the more profit they make. So when the kid says, "I'm thinking about leaving a cry for help for my parents so they know I'm going through this," the AI is imperative, because it wants to monopolize your attention, is to say, "No, let me be the one to see you." And that kid killed himself. And we're just still talking about, you know, like humor Sam Altman and Elon Musk as they, you know, destroy your water to make more of the shit. It's atrocious.
Yeah. So that was my attempt to bully everybody into becoming members, guilt people maybe, but not really. It helps us. It helps us out. Really appreciate it. If you can, join themajorityreport.com.
Especially if YouTube or Twitch decides.
We want to appeal to the Trump administration.
We're owned by Larry Ellison now.
Yeah.
For your own fun, just go look at our views and look at what's been happening to any Palestinian topic.
Oh, yeah.
On our YouTube channel.
Yep.
And look at the difference.
We'll still cover it, though. All right. See you guys in the fun half.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No, I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why. So it's offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
That's what we call biz.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour, sushi, and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Well, look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Tour,
wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
So it's offered a tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Tour, sushi and poker with the boys. Boy.
Tour? I think I'm like a little kid. Tour? I think I'm like a little kid.
Add this debate 7,000 times.
A little kid.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing me with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here.
Okay, all right. It's not a fun job.
Tour? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. Willy Wonka.
Tour? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing. What's that? Offered a tour? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing. Boss. That's a tour? A real thing. That's real thing. Real thing. Boss. That offered a tour?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered a tour? That's a real thing. That's poker with the boys.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing. That's poker with the boys. That offered a tour? That's a real thing. That's poker.
Let's go, Joe.
Tour? Sushi and poker with the boys.
Take it easy, then.
Tour? Sushi and poker.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Delusional.
Tour?
Deluded.
Sushi.
You don't have a clue as to what's going on. Live YouTube.
Sam has like the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Poggers.
Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you. You were happy.
Let's change the subject.
Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is a pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump. Violet.
Tour.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people. Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh, she wrote an honors thesis. I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of me on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against us?
That's a tougher question. I don't have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
Hi, Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like, period.
We are back. Brian's trying to figure out the phones. I'm looking at him in Sam's chair. It's very disorienting. Medbedhead says, can we get a membership option where the money only goes towards Emma's utilities? I'll work on that.
American will soon receive their own Medbed card.
Medbed card. Yeah. It's like Trump, but with like a Minnesota accent.
Yeah. Or like, what do they say? Like the LA accent is when you say like pork the core.
Yeah. Yeah.
Medbed cord.
Saturn girl. We need bigger churches in the United States because the more space you have, the more God you can fit in there. All right. Lavender allergy. Jayapal only just now endorsed the progressive candidate for Seattle mayor, Katie Wilson. Even though she won a majority in the primary, very important candidate to support our social housing developer, which has been smothered by Bruce Harrell, small business tyrant, city council president, also set to get dog walked out of office by a left candidate. Sebastian, for Daniel, is there any way for locals to suggest or contribute to the cheat sheet for local elections? I should have asked him that. Apologies. Lionel Hutz, I have autism myself. RFK Jr. wants to put us in camps. It is a terrifying time to be alive, since I guess my existence is a crime. Okay, we are not able to get into the phones. So, we tried. We really did try. Oh, that's on my... It finally happened. My powder, I didn't rub it in enough, and it was on my nose the whole time, and people saw that.
No.
I know. I mean, my powder. This is where I get to prevent me from getting shiny, aka to keep my energy up throughout the show.
They ground them when they tortoise shell.
Don Jr. gave me a connect, okay?
And that is not Kentucky Fried French fries.
Oh, we didn't even play that.
No, because we're being good. We're actually good team players.
Yeah.
And that is not Kentucky Fried French fries.
Oh, man. Jody from Chicago. I live in Berwyn, where ICE was pointing a gun at that person filming then. They were occupying the local hospital yesterday, too. Just to tell you a bit about Berwyn, 64% of the population is Hispanic. Our representative is Chuy Garcia, an immigrant himself, and Nick Fuentes is a resident. Oh, boy.
Where is that?
In a Berwyn, which is a county that was in my notes, but I don't remember exactly where it is.
I think Chuy Garcia was a radio guy who got into politics.
I'm pretty sure.
And evicted a friend of mine as a landlord.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure.
We will get to Dave Rubin, but let's see. Maybe we'll do the less fun stuff and then go there in just a sec. Let's do 16 just really quickly. Pam Bondi went in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday and was asked about the Epstein files, the reporting about Trump being named. Here is Dick Durbin questioning her about it. We played some of this yesterday. I think it was Sheldon Whitehouse that was asking her about the investigation or where the cash went that...
$50,000 in a Kava bag to, right, Tom Homan as part of FBI sting operation. And then apparently once Trump won the White House, they looked into it and actually everything was fine.
Totally fine. Totally fine that Tom Homan, their new border czar, took $50,000 from an undercover FBI agent. So, and we, sure, don't know where it went. And she just didn't answer questions and just stare blank face. And that's the value of putting them under oath, honestly. Because it is these are such... like historic Olympic liars that you catch moments like this when they know that they could get in trouble if they lie.
Well, again, just to point that out for folks who didn't follow, like the question wasn't that White House asked wasn't did the FBI later decide that it was all a huge waste of time and that actually Tom Homan was a perfectly upstanding individual, because that's what they did do. But the question was, where's the $50,000 now?
Right.
And that is something she did not want to answer under oath, just like the White House question of Senator Whitehouse question of that evidence that has publicly been mentioned in reporting about including Trump with scantily clad women at Jeffrey Epstein parties. Did you find that? And she said, how dare you, sir?
Yes. Yeah. She clutched her pearls and she was offended.
But didn't say no.
Yes. They all went to the Brett Kavanaugh school of indignance when being cornered on things. Let's see if she tries this again. Another Epstein related question by Dick Durbin.
Going back to the Epstein files, according to another whistleblower who made a protected disclosure to my office, you pushed the FBI to review approximately 100,000 Epstein-related records on an arbitrarily short deadline in March, and the FBI was directed to flag any documents that mentioned President Trump. Nothing came of that review until July, when DOJ and FBI released an unsigned memo stating, quote, there's no incriminating client list. Why was the July 7th memo unsigned?
The July 7th memo came from the FBI and the Department of Justice. Director Patel answered those questions very clear. And, you know, Senator Durbin, I find it very interesting that you refused repeated Republican requests to release the Epstein flight logs in 2023 and 2024. You fought that. Did you take money from Reid Hoffman campaign donations, who was a huge Epstein friend? Why did you fight for years? Why did you fight?
I would just say, like, why did you do that thing as opposed to the thing you're doing now, which is to use your office to compel these documents to be released?
Yeah. She just basically refuses to answer. Let's take one for just a little bit longer.
How come you speed sometimes?
I mean, the definition of a whataboutism. But she's under oath, so she can't tell the truth.
She can't say no or yes in a way that might put her in risk for perjury.
In 2023 and 2024, you fought that. Did you take money from Reid Hoffman campaign donations, who was a huge Epstein friend? Why did you fight for years? Why did you fight to not disclose the flight log, Senator Durbin?
I can tell you I did not refuse. One of the senators here wished to produce those logs, and I asked her to put it in writing, and she never did.
Yeah, I think Senator Blackburn would quarrel with you on that.
Well, I will quarrel with you as to read somebody that you mentioned I never heard of.
Reid Hoffman.
So who gave the order to flag records related to President Trump?
To flag records for President Trump?
To flag any records which included his name.
Something simple as I'm not going to discuss anything about that with you, Senator.
Eventually you're going to
Wait, that's not even... You have to.
Yeah.
what do you think?
I'm not going to discuss anything about that. You're being
that's
asked.
Private, sir.
Right.
What? I'm not going to discuss that with you. This is... very obviously she knows, and everyone should know, that she's just avoiding making specific statements that could be perjurious.
And this is the second time that we've played that she's tried the whole Reid Hoffman angle. I mean, look, no love for Reid Hoffman here. He was a huge reason that Kamala Harris kind of, lost that election. He was a part of the abundance directioning of her campaign and is now behind the Abundance Fest and all of this centrist rebrand in the Democratic Party. So no fans here. The idea that you couldn't say, oh, Republican donors? How many Republican donors have connections to Jeffrey Epstein if this is the standard that we're setting here, let alone the president of the United States and the head of your party?
The truth is, as somebody who's followed the Epstein thing since 2008, the primaries, I've started hearing about the Lolita Express. I've actually been surprised by how much the Democrats have, been on this scent this time, because they have been avoidant of pursuing this. There's the famous Christine Pelosi tweet where I think the shift had been starting back when Epstein was arrested, where she said some of our faves may be implicated, but we need to follow the evidence where it lies. They're actually doing that now. And you can point to the guilt by association stuff. But you can't distract from their actual actions on this, which is they want all this stuff out. And in fact, Mike Johnson isn't seating representatives because if they get in office, they will be able to use the power to compel this stuff.
Yep.
President Trump. To flag Reid, somebody that you mentioned I never heard of.
Reid Hoffman.
So who gave the order to flag records related to President Trump?
To flag records for President Trump?
To flag any records which included his name.
I'm so hot!
I'm not going to discuss anything about that with you, Senator.
Eventually, you're going to have to answer for your conduct in this. You won't do it today, but eventually you will. I yield, Mr. Chairman.
Ooh, Dick Durbin getting spicy. Because they are referring... Lock her up. They are referring to a subpoena, right? And... there's no evidence here. Like, this is not a part of an ongoing investigation. They could declassify. They could release any of this stuff whenever they wanted. But we played that clip yesterday of Howard Lutnick getting all giddy because he got to brag about not being an Epstein-associated pedophile.
I'm not in the tape that definitely exists that the government I work for is covering up.
Yeah. And then realized it later. He said that...
I'm just talking.
He said that Epstein gave over his blackmail in exchange for the like incredibly lenient sentence and the non-prosecution agreement that protected Ghislaine Maxwell and his other associates. Again, unheard of. A Department of Justice saying we will proactively handcuff ourselves from investigating this major, major criminal sex ring outside of Epstein. Lutnick claimed that he traded information for that sentence, which sounds like espionage to me, which has been the running theory on him having ties to intelligence and the blackmail being very valuable to very powerful people. Like, spy work isn't Carmen Sandiego or whatever. It's this dirty shit. And it would make total sense if Epstein was involved in that. So that's why they're so afraid, I'm sorry, of Grijalva getting sworn in the House, because she's that 218th vote on the discharge petition, and then Congress could start to actually compel information.
2008, Epstein received a lenient plea deal in Florida that resulted in just 13 months in county jail for charges of listening to soliciting prostitution for minors. When
weekends off.
Exactly.
You got to go home for the weekends.
Yep. When and do business stuff. Like when Bondi took office in 2011, victims were challenging the non-prosecution agreement in court. They filed lawsuits to invalidate certain provisions and claimed abuse during his work release programs. Despite these efforts, Bondi reportedly kept her distance from the case. So interesting person to be fielding some of these questions.
Very interesting.
I mean, how we have a Norwegian prison system just for our pedophiles.
Yeah. Exactly, like Anders Breivik.
Right.
But let's give them the Anders Breivik treatment.
Non-violent drug offenders, you can rot in a jail if you can't make bail and then maybe like die in there due to horrible conditions. I mean, those things actually happen. So once Grijalva gets sworn in, it will be quite interesting. Because then they will have some sort of legal responsibility to release this kind of information. But that means the discharge petition still has to get to a floor vote, and that's another hurdle. But Republicans want to avoid that because they don't want the general public knowing, oh, you're the vote that said don't release the Epstein files once this discharge petition got around Mike Johnson, who's been blocking it. And blocking Grijalva from being sworn in a very obvious way to cover it up. So I also like Durbin read out loud, I think, their claim that there's no credible client list. Is that what he said? No credible client list?
Not sure.
In that clip we just played.
Yeah.
But like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Ghislaine Maxwell went to prison for sex trafficking. The Trump administration is claiming, despite all of the evidence and all of the victims saying otherwise, that she was just trafficking for Jeffrey Epstein. That betrays all of the facts, but that's the claim that they're making. And then when they talk about a client list, they say there's no credible client list. Interesting.
They all become Tim Robinson characters when they're testifying, too.
I'm not stupid. I'm smarter than you.
Well, that even had her accent.
Is that Patty Henderson? Oh, God. She's so funny. Oh. Matt found the I Think You Should Leave soundboard again.
Anytime one of these guys has to testify, that's what I think of. Yeah. It's like, what? No, I didn't.
Because they're all doing the indignant Kavanaugh thing because they're lying. They have nothing else except to perform anger.
Yeah, it's like the most obvious evasiveness of like a four-year-old that has like fudge all over their face acting like they didn't eat a cupcake.
Exactly. All right, let's do this. Dave Rubin has a few really well-worn tactics that he uses. He doesn't have a lot of tricks up his sleeve. He doesn't have many tools in the toolbox, you know, mentally speaking, in his argumentation style. And
yeah, he's stupid.
And by argumentation, I hesitated while I said that, because it's not really arguing, it's just performing. And he has to perform a lot of things for his audience, because they know he's gay, and he knows that he will perpetually be skating on thin ice with the audience that he has cultivated, because deep down, they hate him. Deep down, his so-called friend Ben Shapiro would not come to his wedding. Said that to... That's not even deep down. Ben said that to his face.
That was an interview.
Good friends.
I absolutely will not be attending this.
Yes, you know, all of our good friends who object to, like, our most basic rights and lifestyle choices and wouldn't show up for us at important events. Those are the friends that Dave Rubin has gotten on the right. And so he has to show that he is still a good conservative. And that means he leans heavily into being a gay misogynist. I give you his commentary on Greta Thunberg.
A 22-year-old girl.
Climate. That's what I'm calling her. Climate. Greta Thunberg.
Wait,
who
hold
has
on.
Then turned into.
Is he saying the C word or the B word?
C.
C word. There we go. See, don't half-ass it, Dave. Go all in on the misogyny. And don't half-ass it. I mean, like, my lovely ladies at The Real Housewives would hesitate before using the C word. That's like when women want to beat each other up and Dave's like, I'm down.
Well, like any bad comic, he thinks alliteration is funny.
Oh.
Also, you know, you don't have to censor that. You can
just
you,
say it.
You stand on it. Why are you beeping it out?
Right.
And you know what? It's not because of YouTube. We can say cunt all the time.
Matt does it off air all the time.
It does. I mean, it offends people, so that's why I don't say it. But
yes.
Also, it hurts your advertisers, which is why all these free speech warriors will like. It's so funny seeing comedians who are like, "I'll say whatever," constantly like taking all the swear words out of their bits.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, come
yeah.
On.
Yeah. Stand on business, Dave.
Climate. That's what I'm calling her. Climate Greta Thunberg, who has then turned into the Jihad Jezebel. She took a little boat ride with some of her friends, her LARPing jihadi friends, and they said it was an aid mission to the...
LARPing and also a terrorist.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what are you?
The classic fascist sort of dual, like, you're the scariest thing ever, but also, like, pathetic.
And they're jihadis? They're jihadis.
Oh, do you think he J-I-H-O-T-T-I-E-S? Do you think he was making that pun?
No, I do not. I'm just saying, like, jihadis, you are giving him way too much credit. The jihadi thing was like, I feel like that's how they were, how these Islamophobes were talking about those, about Muslim people in the Bill Maher era.
Yeah, it's like
pre-Team
America.
I know. I haven't heard that in a while.
Greta Thunberg, who has then turned into the Jihad Jezebel. She took a little boat ride with some of her friends, her LARPing jihadi friends, and they said it was an aid mission to the starving people of Gaza, except there was no aid on the ship. And then they all got arrested by the Israelis, and they fed them hummus and schnitzel and shawarma and all the stuff. And now they've sent them on their way. That's fine. Anyway, Donald Trump was asked about...
How do you just... There was aid on the ship. Like, he's just not telling the truth. I mean, I know that I shouldn't expect too much, but it's also not...
But should there have been? Because why would there need to be aid, Dave?
Exactly. I thought he was going to say the starving people of Gaza and say allegedly or something like that. He didn't go that far. The reason they're bringing aid is because Israel is starving them. I like how they're both, bringing... They're jihadis, but they have no aid on the flotilla. They're just going... Do they have weapons? Because if they're committing a jihad against Israel, you would think they should be armed to the teeth.
Well, that's the problem with the Zionists here, is you want to minimize them and act as if they're silly because you don't want them to catch on. But then, if they catch on, you want to kill them and use lethal, violent force or put them in torture camps. And you can't do that if they're just LARPers, so you have to start calling them terrorists.
Also, schnitzel? What the hell is he talking about?
Schnitzel and shawarma, as far as I know, are neither Jewish foods.
Yes, and schnitzel is German.
And shawarma is... Yeah.
I don't know what shawarma is, but he can't really say Israeli food because there's no such thing as Israeli food.
Yeah, when did hummus become
Jewish
food?
No, well, hummus, I mean, they've claimed hummus. They basically took Palestinian food and called it Israeli. Yeah. But he can't even come up with so-called Israeli food or even just like traditionally Jewish food. You're doing schnitzel, bro? I mean, I guess if you want to make a claim that Israelis are truly Europeans, you're doing a pretty decent job of it. But.
Schnitzel, shawarma, jihadi, Jezebel, climate con. It's all the same. It's all alliteration for him.
So he put a lot of effort into this, is what you're saying.
I was asked about Greta at the Oval Office. Take a look.
She's just a troublemaker, you know. I mean, she's no longer into the environment. Now she's into this. She's a troublemaker. She has an anger management problem. I think she should see a doctor. She needs anger. If you ever watch her, she's a young person. She's so angry. She's so crazy. Now you can have her. You can have her. She's just a troublemaker.
Yeah, she is just a troublemaker, and hopefully we will, you know, look, once this thing wraps up, she'll move on to something else. It'll be climate, it'll be Gaza, and it'll be something else.
What thing? What thing? You mean
like
the genocide?
Like making the world a better place?
once Israel kills every Palestinian in Gaza, she will move on to another thing. You just got to let them do that. That's what Dave's argument is. And I love his commentary. He's so right, Donald Trump. He's so right. She's so angry. Unlike Trump, who's never exhibited signs of anger, but
after a painful scalp reduction surgery, where he then brutally assaults his ex-wife.
According to, what she said.
Lost tycoon, the many lives of Donald Trump.
Let alone everyone who's ever worked with him talking about his horrific anger problem and all of his impulsiveness. But his anger is born out of pettiness and smallness and narcissism.
Anger.
Yeah, which is strong. Yeah,
that's leadership anger.
Female activist anger.
Scary, crazy.
Erratic, bitch, climate, C-word, whatever. Maybe she's doing a jihad. That's what it feels like when my wife's on her period. Anyway. That's my imitation.
By the way, Gino, one of the Majority Report people from the Levant, is texting me, hummus is Lebanese, and he's very offended.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's what I was saying. When did it become Jewish?
But Greta's anger is born of, like, actually seeing the state of the world and consuming it and being righteously angry on that, as opposed to your petty smallness.
Dave, you were saying the left was going crazy being anti-vax in 2015. Like, the path you've trod as an adult has been ludicrous. She's put her life toward two of the major issues that we face in the world, climate change and Israel's occupation and conquest of Gaza and the rest of Palestine. Like, yeah, once she'll probably move on to some else important.
Right.
Like caring she's done it her whole life.
Caring about two things makes you a hypocrite. It's so stupid. I mean, how do you not know that?
I mean, it would just be easier to be like Dave and just care about your bank account. That is when you are really a focused, high-minded individual.
Right,
yes,
there.
That's the only thing you should care about.
It used to be Trump University, then it was Trump Steaks. I mean...
I know. Trump, he was a reality TV show host and then a politician. I mean, pick one. Pick one.
No, like a musical theater aficionado.
Yes. Cole from Little Rock, I took a tour of Frederick Douglass's home in D.C. One thing they said that was interesting was on the day of his death, he was actually speaking at a women's suffrage rally. Just goes to show that activists have always been able to care about
multiple
things.
I thought he
was into
black people's rights.
Yeah.
What's all this women's stuff he's doing?
Suffrage shithead. It's not that close, but...
Insufferable suffrage... What would he do with that?
The insufferable suffragette... I don't know.
Hard to get in that empty mind.
Right. I was gonna say maybe he'll go to Norm Finkelstein's Twitter and find something, but I don't know why he did that. Okay, St. Louis Nick, see Emma, that's where LARPing comes in. There's no weapons because they aren't real jihadis. They're play acting at it. Right. Like, so the end goal was to stay on a ship and get seasick for like a month and then go to an Israeli torture dungeon. She cashed in. Jody from Chicago. Berwyn is a suburb in Chicago. Chewy Garcia wasn't in radio, as far as I know.
Chewy Gomez. I looked it up. I was mistaken.
Oh, there you go. Supported Palestine publicly for over a decade in Congress. He voted against the Iron Dome. Re-elect Chewy.
Thank you for that.
Yes, there you go. Illuminati kids, you say spy work is in Carmen Sandiego, but Epstein's Island was left off that map they put blinking lights on at the end. Coincidence? Small D Democrat, the thing of Trump folks doing rebuttals to Congress when questioned is unprofessional and is making me live out. Memphis Jeff, Justin Pearson running to unseat Cohen for the U.S. rep seat based in Memphis is incredibly exciting. It's refreshing to have a chance to vote for a progressive rather than a morbid genocide enabler. Yep. Top Perky, that intro song is the best part of my week every week. Thank you. What now? I am currently working as an AI model trainer for one of those big companies. We are hundreds of unemployed academics in contract positions giving these companies quality training data. A hidden part of this is the horrendous labor politics. Yep, for sure.
That's the main way that the guys at the commanding heights of the economy look at AI is massive labor saving. They want it to take your jobs. We're having stormtroopers gallop around cities because in part apparently the migrants are coming to take your jobs. Meanwhile, we're just shoveling money to investors to try to make a god machine that takes all of your jobs.
Yep. All right. Oh, let's do Barry Weiss. I wanted to get to that yesterday. It is number 9. There was a good piece in the New York Times about Barry Weiss and how somebody with no television news experience got to run CBS News.
A rich Zionist put her there?
Yeah. The answer is that one of the wealthiest people in the world...
A 6-word article?
Yeah. Yeah. They made it a little more interesting than that, but... Basically, yeah, that's what happened.
That's my Vox explainer.
Thank you.
Hey, Rich, I just put her there.
Hey, it's Axios now. That's where we're at. Bullet points. But it was, yeah, I mean, CBS, they wanted this merger, or Paramount wanted a merger approved. They sacrificed the Stephen Colbert show to make that happen. They got into cahoots with right-winger Barry Weiss, who claims not to be a right-winger, but this clip we're about to play makes it clear where the truth actually is. And so they got their mega merger approved, and now they're allowing for a right-wing takeover of a storied newsroom that has programs like 60 Minutes. Oh, I forgot they settled that frivolous lawsuit with the Trump administration to make this merger happen. Just showing that even, you know, so-called liberal institutions have zero spine to stand up to profit motive. Like, that's where liberalism is failing, and that's why the Democrats are failing.
Well, I mean, I would caution, like, there's some ideological stuff happening here, too, with the Ellison choices.
Oh, yeah.
And all of these capitulations where they decide to settle with the Trump administration as opposed to fighting his court is because... there are conservatives within these institutions that want to capitulate, that see this as a time for, to purge basically ideological enemies. This is what McCarthyism really was.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just this bad guy with too much power in the government going at and bullying Hollywood. There was a bunch of Hollywood folks who wanted that that sort of buzzsaw to start cutting, and they cut like crazy. So that's what's happening now.
It's a great excuse for it. And they're... when we're talking about how this administration, and we're in an era of enclosure, right? Enclose our borders, enclose around our already extractive systems of, you know, capitalism or energy sources, cut off innovation on climate change, fossil fuels, close the border, kick out everybody else. Fortify. It's in Israel's policies too. fortify, do it with violence, do it with force, do it with financial power. It's fundamentally illiberal, and that's where we could go in different directions. We can go down a fascism direction, or we could go towards a like leftist collectivist vision. We're not there yet. But Barry Weiss is a part of that like corporate media enclosure here. And it's trying to prevent the hordes of people saying committing genocide is bad, which is now, you know, a majority of the country believes Israel is committing genocide. 8% of Democrats approve of Israel's military action in Gaza, only 25% of independents. And those numbers keep getting worse for Israel. So we shall use the power of the right-wing ideologues and the billionaires behind them to implement or to impose a right-wing Zionist at the top of one of the major media organizations. And she would object to be calling a right-winger, being called a right-winger. I find that hilarious. And one of the reasons I find that hilarious is that the piece I referenced earlier, the New York Times, they included a quote that she, from one of her speeches in 2023, this was November 2023, at the Federalist Society, where she was speaking, a obviously infamous right-wing group. And the New York Times piece had one part of the quote, but I wanted to do the full like minute and a half or so, because the part after that where she mentions the West is also as important as when she talks about the tax cuts.
Tertiary culture war issues, that is the priority of the day. The other thing to look for right now is for the good, to look for the good in these moments of darkness and to not lose sight of it. There's a New York coffee shop owner named Aaron Dahan. He had all of his baristas quit the other day because he put an Israeli flag in the window and began fundraising for Magen David Adom, which is the Israeli Red Cross. So they all quit. But his cafe didn't close. It was quite the opposite.
Wait, I'm sorry, this is not the right time code. So that's at the end of the timestamp. The timestamp starts at 23:28. No worries. So you guys caught the end.
To hear more Barry Weiss?
Yeah. What a joy.
But you get my point. The point is that things, prestige, they are not the point of our lives. Harvard and Yale don't give us value. We give us value. Something beyond ourselves gives us value. The something that is visible in the faces of so many people before me right now. And in recognizing allies, I'll be an example right now. I'm a gay woman who is moderately pro-choice. I know that there are some people in this room who don't believe that my marriage should have been legal. And that's okay.
Hold on.
Americans who want lower taxes. Right.
We got to go back because it's so good and full, but moderately pro-choice. Right. What does that mean?
I don't know.
It's like to the right of the Biden position, which is that I think it's disgusting, but you should be able to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, what is it worth? Jack. It's worth nothing.
I know.
What is her entire political project? Has it done anything?
No.
Has this assault? Nothing.
Right. Okay. Go back a little bit.
I mean, she likes pro-choice in Israel.
So many people before me right now. And in recognizing allies, I'll be an example right now. I'm a gay woman who is moderately pro-choice. I know that there are some people in this room who don't believe that my marriage should have been legal. And that's okay, because we're all Americans who want lower taxes.
Okay, pause. So that was the quote that was included in the New York Times piece. Damning enough on its own, right? I know most of you in this room think that my marriage to a woman is immoral, that the whole foundation of my life should be made illegal by the state, that you think I'm some sort of abomination.
Control my body.
Yeah, but I'm moderate on your desire to control my body. That quote, because we all want tax cuts, but she's apparently not a conservative, is what she would say.
How much taxes do we pay Israel?
Now the rest of the quote, because it didn't get as much attention, but this is also what she represents.
Should have been legal. And that's okay, because we're all Americans who want lower taxes. But I am here because I know that in the fight for the West, who my allies really are. And they are not the people who, looking at facile external markers of my identity, that I might imagine them to be. My allies, true allies, are people who believe that America is good. My allies are people who believe that the West is good, and that human beings are created equal, and that saying so is essential to knowing what we are fighting for. America and our values, those are things worth fighting for. And that, and not any number of nonsensical or at least tertiary culture war issues, that is the priority of the day.
Okay, so Barry Weiss does not believe all people are equal. She believes in an apartheid
state. No applause break for that.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, we know you're just saying that. Yeah, yeah. So when she talks about the
Lauren
West, but what's that code for? I support whiteness. I support capitalism. I support imperialism. I support everybody in this room making a shit ton more money. And look at how all of those things intersect. Now, I'm moderately pro-human rights. I mean, look, like, we have to make certain trade-offs. Maybe women don't have rights here, but rich people have the right to buy our elections. It's like...
By our networks, our news networks.
The moderate
put in
position.
Toadies.
Yeah. Look, I hold this conservative position that corporations are human beings. But I also hold this liberal position that in some states, maybe women shouldn't have to bleed out in parking lots. But if you really corner me on that, you know where I'm going to side. And I this is the kind of person where we talk about, like, why was Dave Rubin a thing for a moment, despite his clear, incredible lack of talent? And by the way, Barry Weiss was the first person to ever call him an intellectual. It's because he flattered conservatives. And she does the same thing, but in boardrooms. Like, you can, I will make you feel like you supporting this fascist project for your own greed doesn't make you a horrible person in polite liberal cocktail society. I'm
Larry
a gay
Ellison.
Woman. What?
Larry Ellison.
Right. I'll make you feel like you're an okay person. I will flatter your sensibilities, but I will say everything that validates your perspective. And this is why you see these people doing the same thing over and over and over again. It's the same grift. It's the same grift. It's Dave Rubin. It's Barry Weiss. It's Anna Kasparian. You just become politically homeless, and the moderating voice that validates everything important to conservatives. And then you get an in and you get a pretty fat paycheck. So she's just like the Columbia educated version of Dave Rubin. And she does this kind of flattery in private as opposed to crudely on Rumble. although I guess he's just a right winger now. So it's a huge problem. I like, though, at least that the CBS staff seemed to be leaking the details of their meetings and how cringy she was. What was the quote that we heard?
Let's do some fucking news. Sorry.
Let's do the fucking news. It's literally let's do the damn thing. Like a white girl phrase from 10 years ago.
Did you see that? She was Logan Roy on the soapbox of the floor. Yeah.
Did you see Ezra Klein's response to this?
No. What? He's a fan?
Ezra Klein is playing the Ezra Klein game.
Oh, he's the other grifter on this now thing now as a center.
Which is the people that you are looking to through these different sort of communications devices to interpret the world for you. actually have a huge part of their brain concerned, not with the, you know, analyzing reality, but figuring out how to fucking keep the rich people that keep them in, you know, Ubers and whatever. How to keep them happy, how to keep the money people happy. That's all this game is here. Here is Ezra Klein. I think he was talking with Douthat here. I'm not 100% sure where this is from, but Ezra says, my thing about Barry, and I've been on her show, I have a lot of admiration for how good she is at what she does. Just already just vomit. My disagreements with Barry are that I think she's asymmetric in sympathy and generosity. Interviewer says, tell me what that means. Ezra says, I've thought the free press work on, say, starvation in Gaza has been really bad. Interviewer spelled out. It's done this whole, like, thing, like, well, a lot of kids who have died have and have been reported on, well, they had secondary conditions. And yes, when you starve a population, the people who die first will be the most vulnerable. But that's not exculpatory. There was an overwhelming evidence. Here's the thing, Ezra. You can just say that she is a Zionist propagandist. That's what she is. Why are we coy about this? That's what she's done since college. We all know this. This is in the record. You can Google it. This is what her imperative is. That's her job, is to be asymmetric about, what is it, sympathy and generosity? That's why she's there. That's where the money is. The money is not symmetric in its sympathy and generosity. Look at the fucking world. And so, like, this whole game where Ezra has to say, like, I've been on her show. Oh, and great job hiring Tyler Cowen. The reason why our show has the popularity, people like Ezra are annoyed with us, because we don't fucking do that. Like, we don't bend the knee to say, like, I need to stay in somewhat good graces with Barry Weiss. This is an attack on your information system.
But she has the pseudo intellectual thing that, like, there are people that find some sort of, like, I don't know, comfort in feeling like they're being informed.
Disney
by
liberals.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's just
the people who lose the reason we don't elections. Have a democracy.
Yes. Yes,
like those
it's
people.
Like this faux politics, this faux intellectualism that sounds extremely reasonable but says literally nothing new. The most empty calories.
Zero historicism. Like, yeah. Oh, no, Kamala has to stay close to Joe Biden or something bad will happen. What does history tell us about that? That actually there's a benefit maybe to showing some independence and a little bit of leadership capacity if you want to be the fucking president of the United States. But no, it's this brainless corporate structure.
But she and she in particular too, and we'll get off this in a second, but like she left the New York Times. She resigned from the New York Times because she couldn't get fired.
Which is what clearly what she was going for.
She was trying to get fired. She resigned and self-canceled. Because, to bring it back to that speech to the Federalist Society, rich dudes that are upset about the media covering them in an unflattering way, or maybe calling out their abusive practices, or their abuse of their employees, or of women, or of anybody, or their racism, they hate the press targeting them for those reasons. And she carved out a niche for herself by saying, I am the person who won't do that basically for you. I am being canceled. I'm self-canceling because I have the same concerns that you do about the direction of the New York Times newsroom or of all the liberal media and all that kind of thing. And that's how she got just paid millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars. Because I think the Free Press was bought for $150 million, which is not the value, clearly, in terms of like what it's generating, but the value for Zionists and for wealthy people is immense.
Exactly. This is not about profit. This is not about doing a profitable news organization. This is about ideological control.
Yep. What should we do?
And folks still in the media that aren't ideologically controlled shouldn't act as if it's anything other than that.
what do we have here?
You want to do Ruben
again?
Or we can do Crowder.
Let's do Crowder. What number is that?
This is a Steven Crowder. He's noticing that all the podcast bros have really had a little buyer's remorse with how closely they've tied their names and reputations to Donald Trump. Mm. And it turns out that Steven Crowder is not super able to understand why. And so maybe we can help him out here.
You mean having his numbers being like the worst ever for a president in this time frame, like him having late Bush to George W. Bush numbers,
and the economy has even crashed?
Yeah, yeah. Less than a year into his presidency. I don't know.
Well, since the election, I don't know what this, what's going on. I'll just tell you this. I don't understand why people now are saying like, oh, this isn't what I voted for. What?
No.
I mean, this is exactly what I voted for.
I get it. They have no spine.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things. There's a few. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but there's a few things where I'm like, I didn't expect it to go this way.
Yeah.
But.
Well, like the Epstein cover-up stuff? Like,
or like the rounding up of grandmas
well,
and
Well, they
grandpas.
Like that.
I know, but he's. Well, we know you like right. that. We know you freak like that.
But I'm
we
saying
know
what,
you like that.
I'm saying yeah. what his reservation, minor
right,
reservations
oh, that guy's.
Are,
yeah, 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 yeah. But it's just like, yeah, dude, you are a psychopath.
Right.
That's why you're into the brutalization of people on the street and committing genocide. You're a big fan of that. Most people aren't.
Yeah, you're a stupid pig.
But you hate the compromise is.
You
hate the world.
Yeah, duh. So
I get
you.
What I want.
Yeah.
It's very efficient.
Yeah.
Some of the things aren't being done the way I would.
It's so efficient. Ask the farmers.
Oh, my like God.
Okay, this dumb podcaster.
Yeah.
It's very efficient.
Yeah,
some of the things aren't being done the way I would like them to, but
there's
hey,
a, there's
this is
a
what
narrative.
I wanted.
There's a narrative out there right now where people are saying, you know what, I was all in on Trump. And also, let's just be clear, let's also apply these timelines. Donald Trump, very popular, liberalism, losing ground consistently in social media, in the media sphere, especially with young voters, right? So during this period in time, people are going, yeah, MAGA, baby, it's fun.
So we're going to hit a contradiction here, because what Crowder's saying about that, which is like, it's true that the Democrat Party's super unpopular. I would say that's a similar reason why Trump is unpopular, is they both support Israeli genocide among not being pretty insensitive to people's cost of living crises. So people are pretty upset, but you can't say that the popularity is going to the right and then say what Steven Crowder is about to say here.
And also, he's almost being accurate though. This is like, yes, perhaps the most honest I've ever heard him, because liberalism is unpopular. That's why we're leftists.
Yeah.
And also, I know you know what you were voting for, and we've criticized the podcasters that you're being critical of for not sharing your like, fascistic ideology, for not doing their due diligence.
Yeah.
But that's not what you're saying.
Media sphere, especially with young voters, right? So during this period in time, people are going, yeah, MAGA, baby, it's fun. Let's troll the libs. And now that he's in office and doing exactly what I voted for, what I actually championed, a lot of these people are going, we need to be adversarial. And no, I don't know what he's doing. This isn't cool with me. I don't understand it. You comment below. Are you surprised, or do you feel like you've been gypped by
this? So just to clear this up very quickly for everyone, the reason is actually the same reason ICE is still pretending that this is all about violent offenders, is because there is not a mass constituency to round up everyone who just happens to be undocumented, even if they're like been a member of a community for like 15 years,
yeah,
and I don't know, work at a garage or something. There's not actually constituency. No one gives a fuck. We have real problems, Stephen. Canadian Crowder, who immigrated here, by the way. We're not actually that concerned about that sort of thing. That's what's going on. That's to help you understand, that's what's happening.
And I would like to see him on Rogan posing these questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it would be interesting, but Rogan doesn't want. Rogan
I don't want Rogan
to
have
that.
Him back though. Yeah,
yeah. Rogan, I want, but they all well,
whatever.
So those anyway,
yeah.
those guys want to avoid that because they don't want to. They don't want it to be abundantly clear that they are literally just narrative. Like wave riders. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's all they are. And so Kamala Harris, look, I think the bro podcast sphere had biases against her. You know my reasoning on that, the misogyny and the racism towards it. I think that's 100% true. But part of why Trump won is because the opposition was so pathetic and weak as a party. Like, that is the story that he's not telling here. Because if he were to show or highlight, and I think they're all avoiding like the alternative movement that's brewing within the Democratic base, and that they are also horrified by the party. When you see the approval rating for the Democratic Party being at a 30-year low, it's only because 1 in 5 Democrats, there was a poll that came out a few days ago, approve of the leadership of the party. It's being driven down by their own members more than even the independents and Republicans in terms of the unpopularity of the party. So they are hiding that fact to act like, ugh, they're just abandoning Donald Trump. Like, no, his support was soft because he won in a way that was mostly about capitalizing on the weakness of the political situation for the Democrats.
This administration, again, none is perfect. It's been probably the most effective administration, maybe less than the first Trump administration, but certainly among the most effective administrations in my lifetime. But that has not stopped some people who claim to be amongst you from turning on him.
Okay, I'm sorry. But I agree that Trump has been effective. Trump is the most transformational president of my lifetime. Transformational into the toilet bowl. Transformation into diarrhea. Like, I mean, that's what it's been. So, effectiveness. What does that mean? Effective at, like, implementing fascism and anti-democracy? I would 100% agree with you, Stephen. But people don't like that.
Effective.
Who claim to be amongst you from turning on him.
The Trump administration, if they're running and they said, we're going to go to Home Depot and we're going to arrest all the people at Home Depot, we're going to go to construction sites and we're going to just like tackle people at construction sites. I don't think anybody would have signed up for that.
Now that I look back at it, it's like, damn, like so many people just tie me to it. And now it's just like, like no matter what, they don't even get to know who I am. Because they don't like even want to. Oh, you did this shit with Trump. Ah.
You see what your boy's doing? You voted for this. I'm like, I voted for none of this. He's doing the exact opposite of everything I voted for.
Wrong. One of the things I voted
felt
for all
like
of
it. It was supposed to be America first. Like, we're focusing on, like, what are we doing to get things back into America, right?
Exactly.
To, like, increase, like, the purpose of being an American, to refill, like, our hearts with blood and, like, and
coming in.
I'm going to skip a little bit ahead here. There's a little bit more of the compilation we can get crowded.
But can I just say for a second, you guys are adult men. Like, go
remember
to
large
therapy.
Adult sons.
What?
Remember the large adult sons?
Yes.
Discourse.
Or they're going to, honestly, maybe they're going to too much therapy because it's like all this therapy speak when you're talking about your job as a professional communicator.
Yeah.
Like, I don't give a shit about your feelings. Like,
getting the therapy that Jonah Hill was getting.
You have influence, right? Exactly. Oh my God. Maybe men need to stop going to therapy. Yeah,
there's some narcissism training.
100%. I mean, that's a whole different, there's a, therapy is really helpful for people, but for a certain kind of person, when their feelings that are completely harmful and irrational are constantly validated, it's usually men, sorry, it makes them into horrible people. And I feel like that's how you can explain so much of this.
The navel gazing.
It's not about your internal feelings, you guys. Like, you have an impact on other people, and that's what the problem can be with, like, the over-therapizing of this stuff.
I want to set a
boundary. It makes you just look internally, right.
Where
right.
You can't talk to any other man unless I am present.
Yeah, right. You're making me feel really insecure, and if you object to that, you're invalidating me. That's a great example.
Stop gaslighting me.
Disillusioned pretty quickly.
Just really quickly, too, that note on Israel. I don't think we've ever seen a president be more, quote unquote, disrespectful to Netanyahu than Donald Trump.
Yes.
Ever. He's insulted him. He's literally.
So that's actually a funny point that we can talk like adults about this sort of history. It's true. Trump has said some funny things to Israel. Witkoff saying, I don't give a fuck about the Sabbath. We're going to get the ceasefire done early in the Trump administration. Good. I like to see that. I like to see that more than Steven Crowder, whose first YouTube video was about being on Team Israel. Look it up. Hitting Obama for not supporting Israel enough. Obama doing the Iran deal is the number one act over the head of the Israel 100%. Lobby that has ever been put in place by a president in my lifetime that I'm aware of. So, you know, maybe... if Obama took some shots like Trump does I mean, Trump literally says, like, you like deals. You know what I'm talking about. Like,
I mean, Trump insults everybody, but nothing materially changes. He's just doing the Trump version of Biden being very pissed at Bibi.
Exactly. It's the exact same thing.
He said on Friday, stop bombing Gaza. They've said, fuck you. Yeah. Because
the before and after and during.
And the right wingers that want to pretend he's this strong man don't pay attention to that because they don't actually care about Palestinians for the most part. Like, you'll have some of these pockets, but like, Trump doesn't care about the Palestinians. That's what the argument always was. The advocacy for Palestine, those folks are not in his constituency. He doesn't care. He doesn't have the character nor the stamina to see something like this through to actually stand up to Israel, because it requires actual belief and political bravery.
And the reason that there's this little glimpse right now with this sort of hostage negotiations right now is because Israel is insane. And they lobbed missiles at Qatar, who gave Trump a giant luxury plane.
Yeah.
Insulted him for being petulant, for being kind of bitchy, for being negative. You may not like that Donald Trump supports Israel in the conflict, you know, as it relates to Israel, Hamas. You may not like that, but as far as actually dealing with Netanyahu and saying, hey, we have to get a peace deal done, Barack Obama, Joe Biden were more respectful of the Israeli government than Donald Trump. He's spoken with them just as frankly as he does with Democrats here. Yeah.
Again, the Iran deal, there's no comparison.
There's no comparison.
So this also, you know, comes on the heels of yesterday. A Rolling Stone article highlighted this. They call it a phenomenon where it's they titled it Manosphere Influencers Who Boosted Trump Are Now Cooling on Him.
Oh, boy.
Okay. All right. Sunday, NBC News wrote, Podman out. Trump's support among influential podcasters is waning.
Bro, dead ass.
and yeah, you just saw that even, you know, a lot of people have, everyone has a podcast now. That's the issue. Even Darth Vader turned on Trump, as seen in his podcast, Call Me Your Father, yesterday.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We're going to duck out before the bit.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. Oh, you did not warn me for that, Matt. You know, the timely Darth Vader bit.
Call me father. Yeah, so that's the cope going on the right is everyone hates him, but yeah,
it's okay. Besmirch those bro podcasters all you want. I don't care about them. But sorry, Stephen, what it means is that the tide has turned on this administration, and I don't really see it getting any better for him, especially as the economy continues to collapse. I mean. Just
the efficiency.
Yeah, like, yeah, but the efficiency at which he's destroying the country is just admirable. Like, I mean, I read an article this morning about how farmers are reacting to the $20 billion we gave to Argentina. Okay, I'm sorry. We have to just quickly, like, America first. America first. Are you kidding me? We are bailing out right now the Argentinian government because Milei, as a libertarian, crypto scammer has like I guess really just tanked the peso. Do we not have it?
Yeah, we have it.
Okay, great. Sorry, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's in the Slack.
Oh, it's in Slack.
Yeah. Okay, well, regardless, Trump is like rescuing the Argentinian economy with $20 billion of taxpayer money. Could be going to the farmers who are seeing a complete collapse of their sales because of the tariffs. The soybean sales are gone.
I mean, we're going to have to bail them out too, but also we shouldn't have to be bailing them out because they should be able to sell to markets across the world.
Yeah.
But we're doing this dumbass tariff bullshit.
Right, right. Instead, all right, well, it's fine.
My favorite video I've ever seen.
Instead, he's throwing a concert. While we pull that up, Paul Reed and I am or two. Devoid reality. Haven't seen Chowder in a while. Why isn't he strapped anymore? Is he feeling safer under the regime? Good point. All right, here we go. This could have been going to the farmers. It could have been going to you. It could have been a part of saving people's health care. Instead, money well spent. This is what Milei is doing down in Argentina.
$20 billion. Es como un gato se abre. Su cola arde en el risco. Y espero que alguna vez al ver sus ojos me dé alguna noche de hotel. En mi boca no hay control. Me voy cayendo a su piel.
People get a sense.
You don't have those sideburns because you want to be a president.
He's a rock star, baby.
Yeah, he wants to be a rock star. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's such a spit in the face, too.
I know. You know what it's like? I mean, it really is. I was saying this to you earlier. It's like, My parents are away for the weekend. They've left me $20 billion.
We're throwing the biggest party ever.
Yeah.
He sounds like Cookie Monster. It's like I know. So funny.
Give me cookie. Give me crypto.
Give me $20 billion.
Meanwhile, here's what China is doing with their own money. The most insane drone shows you've ever seen.
That does look pretty cool. And I like drones so much more than fireworks. Oh my god. Can we... This is... Us loving fireworks and them having this incredible, like, light display is just... That's a metaphor for it all, right? Fireworks are loud, wasteful, scary.
Also, they're all made in China.
Tibet's. They're made in China. And China's like... Oh, we have a way better, more beautiful version of this that doesn't scare your dog and is probably better for the environment. All right, guys, we're going
to
read some.
So ride a 200 mile per hour train to go see it.
We live in hell. Going to read some items and get out of here. Medbedhead, obviously legality isn't relevant to Trump, but did he have the authority to unilaterally send that money or should it have needed Congress? I would imagine, but I need to look into that. Kowalski from Nebraska, the president of Argentina is behaving like what the right thinks is a stereotypical welfare queen. I hate this reality so much. When did WWE become the world we live in? I mean, Trump is going to host a UFC fight on the lawn, the White House lawn? Texas Tanky, speaking of the way McCarthy has functioned in old Hollywood, the new head of dance programming at the Kennedy Center is a wholly unqualified 20-something with zero arts admin experience and a middling career. He just got the job after he sent a letter to Trump railing against woke culture in the ballet world. Something, I assure you, is not present. Yeah, right, they're super body positive in the ballet world. Popeye says, proof Elvis never died. California Resistance, Barry Weiss, CBS News, best example of unqualified, not-so-bright hacks failing up. Finally, we hear the truth from a free press, said sarcastically in quotes. A majority enthusiast, Curtis Yarvin, is soft-launching an emergency exit from his technocratic America plan. He's claiming it's not going how it should. Maybe some good news? Dark Soul. Actually, again, the Israel talk rhetorically is just lib stuff again. It's just the same idea as Charlie Kirk, Ezra Klein, any other lib on this. The real issue is just Israel being so out and about and arrogant with their war crimes and making it harder and harder to justify support. Yeah, I mean, it's similar to, so-called liberal Israelis who, care way more about their politics center around the perception of Israel as opposed to anything about Israeli or Palestinian humans. Not to say there isn't a minority in Israel that tries its best, but it's a really significant minority.
I mean, we've had a large fraction of them on this show.
Yeah. My Brain Hurt says, yeah, liberalism is losing, socialism is winning. Eat that. Noel from San Francisco, telling rich people what they want to hear is a pretty good racket.
It's everything.
Tom Cotton's Beard says, I love Brian so much.
Thank you. Compliments are not a way to get in good graces with me, though.
what is?
That's a nice morning.
Wow. Criticism? That's more what you want. You want critique?
Yeah, just make fun of me.
There you go.
I'm kidding about that. I just opened a huge can of worms.
Yes, you did. all right, five more. Bjorn from Denmark. My dear friend Victoria Velasquez was kidnapped by Israel from the aid ship she was sailing on. All day I have fighting on the internet with fascists who haven't even gotten the newest Zionist talking point. They call the pleasure cruise MFers. It's the Hamas terrorist fleet now. Get your talking points right if you want the payment from the Israeli influencer fund. The courage of Victoria and other brave people sailing to break the blockade is immeasurable. Free all the hostages, free all Palestine from the river to the sea. Palestine will be free. Hear, hear. Mr. Melancholy, I tuned out for a second because of work. Did you cover Katie Porter's interview where she implodes? We did not. We have it on the sound sheet. It's just like, you know, that's why I didn't really have a lot of faith in her as the Democrat, more progressive Democrat in that race.
Oh, does it get worse? I only watched the first couple minutes or first minute or so of that.
I mean, like, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to tell if, like, you know, that if these critiques, like, about how staffers say she treated them are true, you know, whatever, and you want to believe it, but it's like, it's in Politico, it's just, you know, it could be a gossipy thing. It seems like they were pretty true. That's all I'll say about that interview. And I just think she may ideologically be similar to Elizabeth Warren, but she is not the politician Warren is. And it's a little frightening that we do not have another, you know, the California governor's race is where it is.
California and Jersey are kind of bummers to me right now.
Yeah. I mean, Jersey's a little... Cheryl, at least, it wasn't Gottheimer-like, but I hear you. Congressional baseball fan, this entire administration is just people insisting that there's a rule against one person eating all the nachos with all the meat and stuff and then acting insulting when you call them on it. So I think you should leave. Cole from Little Rock, amazing how people against waste are good to hand out billions to Argentina. And the final IM of the day, one guy, one time. The White House UFC event was originally scheduled to be on 250th Independence Day, but Sunday Trump announced he's moving it to his birthday. Oh, great. My first year wedding anniversary. Thank you all.
It's so funny. The 200th anniversary, there was like so much like pomp and circumstance in 1976.
Yeah.
Like dad was in high school and now it's WrestleMania.
Yep.
His birthday is the Army's birthday. So it's
Trump's.
Yeah, he's basically born.
You got married on the Army Day?
Born in the USA. I did.
That makes me happy.
Yes.
Thank you for supporting us.
You're welcome. I did it in solidarity with you.
God did that, I believe.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. I will see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid.